Random Psychic, A Shade of Mind, Book 1. Written by D.N. Leo. Narrated by Catherine Edwards. Hate leaves ugly scars. Love leaves beautiful ones. Mignon McLaughlin, The Second Neurotic's Notebook, 1966. Chapter 0. She stared at the last 3 seconds of her life. A red double-decker full of passengers was racing straight at her, and she couldn't do anything but stare at it. Like the traffic and everything else surrounding it, the bus seemed to move in slow motion. But Madeline was more than certain that it was zooming in full speed in reality. The bus was going to crush her the same way the kidnap and ransom ordeal had cut short Joe's life. Joe was like her sister. They had grown up together, but they might not grow old together. Madeline kept staring at the bus. It was real. It was enormous. And her psychic ability didn't seem to help at all, if she did have such ability. 5 seconds ago, Madeline had seen it, the haunting blue dot hovering in the air, giving her guidance. She couldn't believe her eyes. She was a psychic, after all. The blue dot glared at her and blinked. That's unusual, she had thought. It had been 3 days that she'd stalked this place, and now her psychic ability had finally decided to kick in. About damn time. She could save Joe now, and her life would be back to the way it was. Not that her life had been spectacular, but it was much better than her current situation. The second blue dot appeared, blinking at her. She gazed at the dots, and then they were no longer blinking. They weren't blue either, but a bright yellow. And they came with sound. Honking. Shouting. She blinked. They weren't her psychic blue dots, but the headlights of a double-decker racing at her in full speed. She glanced around. In a blur of motion, she realized she had just stepped out in front of ongoing traffic in the middle of a busy road in the center of London. She now stood in her reality and froze. Chapter 1. Someone grabbed Madeline's arm and pulled her back onto the sidewalk. The double-decker zoomed past, and the other cars kept moving. If it had been New York, she would have stirred up a hideous bout of road rage. Madeline was still dazed. She turned around and looked at the man who had just saved her life.
"Are you okay?"
"Thank you,"
she automatically said, and immediately realized that those words she kept in her vocabulary inventory didn't exactly answer the man's question. Then Madeline shook her head. "Focus. Stay strong. You're Joe's only hope," she scolded herself. She turned toward the man who was still looking at her with concern.
"I'm fine, thank you. I'm sorry. The jet lag is killing me. And apparently I was looking the wrong way."
She gestured toward the traffic and smiled.
"Madeline, I'm from New York."
She reached her hand out for a handshake.
"Peter, I'm from here, apparently."
He fumbled with his briefcase, swapping it to his left hand so that he could respond to Madeline's greeting. Madeline pointed at the building across the road. "I'm looking for LeBlanc Pharmaceuticals, but I think I've got the wrong address. That building looks more like military barracks than business headquarters." Peter arched an eyebrow, looking Madeline up and down.
"I'm a journalist. I'm writing a business column about one of their new products. Is there a problem?" Madeline asked.
"Oh, no. No problem at all. Nobody has any problem with LeBlancs."
Madeline smiled and waited for the next part of Peter's speech, but it never came. Instead, he shrugged.
"Well, to be honest, even the locals know almost nothing about them. I'm sorry I can't help you, but I can certainly show you around if it does any good. And the eye around the corner is one of London's hotspots. I'm sure it would help cure your jet lag."
Madeline smiled but cursed on the inside. Peter was a decent-looking man. She hadn't been in a serious relationship for a while. Not that no one was interested in her, but her situation was too complicated to let anyone into her life. Still, it was nice to be hit on occasionally. She was tall, slim, and attractive enough, but Madeline didn't consider herself pretty.
She had a slightly long, oval face, big brown eyes, and a generous mouth with full lips, and a dimple on her left cheek. A sea of brunette curls wrapped around her shoulders. A hot cup of coffee was tempting, but now was not a good time. "I'm sorry. I've got to get this done, or my boss will be very unhappy. Thanks for the offer, Peter. Maybe next time." Madeline waved her gloveless hand goodbye and scurried away, shivering in the winter chill. She glanced at the reflection on the shop window and saw that the smile on Peter's face had been replaced by a strange look. She wouldn't be mistaken. She had seen that look several times. It was the look of a predator who had just lost his prey. Instead of going straight home, she turned to the opposite direction and headed toward a crowded shopping center. Chapter 2. Hours later, throwing her light backpack over her shoulders, Madeline headed toward a small apartment on a back street in Knightsbridge. Rows of terrace houses that curved along a tree-lined street looked invitingly at her. The black Gothic-styled light poles and street fences accentuated the beautiful blend of modern and classic London. She normally adored and admired the architecture, but right now, Madeline was cursing the amount of money she had to pay to stay in Knightsbridge on such short notice. There, she saw those blue dots again. It had been a secret she'd only told Joe, and Joe called it her psychic ability. After the incident in the bush that both Madeline and Joe didn't want to remember, Madeline had appeared to be able to see people's minds, or at least she thought that's what it was. Sometimes it came from those she had been in contact with. That was how Joe speculated she was able to track down a missing person. Sometimes it randomly came from a stranger when they directed their thoughts at her. Other times she had absolutely no explanation of where the dots came from. She wasn't a mind reader. She didn't know what the thoughts were about. She just saw them as blue dots. Ironically, her randomly found ability only worked when she didn't need it, like when it had led her in front of a fast-approaching bus. The dots hovered in front of her and then moved toward the alley leading to Hyde Park. After the near-fatal encounter with the bus, Madeline didn't think it was wise to follow the psychic specs anymore. She ignored them and headed home. Her cell phone buzzed as soon as she entered her apartment. She picked up the phone and kicked the door closed. "Madeline," she answered while searching for the light switch on the wall. At the other end of the line, a male voice croaked,
"I miss you. It's been a few days. What do you got for me?"
"Zan, I almost got hit by a bus trying to get to the door of LeBlanc Pharmaceuticals. Their premises are guarded like a military barracks. Seriously, I'd have a better chance of running through the gates of Buckingham Palace to the Queen's private chamber than breaking into the front yard of that building."
"That's why I sent you there, honey. We can't compete with the LeBlancs using weapons, money, or manpower. Your little gift is just what we need."
Madeline finally found the light switch. She flicked it on and strode toward the fireplace. Her teeth were never going to stop chattering if she didn't get a fire going. "I don't have any gifts, Zen. You know I can barely operate a computer, let alone hunt down a computer geek and ask him questions about an avatar."
"I saw the games you played with Joe, Madeline. Don't bluff with me."
Madeline closed her eyes. Damn. Joe made her play guessing games just to prove that Madeline's psychic ability was real. Joe believed in it more than she did. Since Joe was doing research on a new simulation game, Madeline thought it'd be fun to help out. Now those games were biting her in the backside. "Look, Zen, it's been days and I haven't been able to get inside. You have to give me more information than just look for a white knight."
"But that's all I have,"
Zen screamed through the phone. She could hear his heavy breathing and his swallow to suppress his anger. She lowered her voice. "If you let me talk to Joe, we could figure something out."
"You want to talk to her? Okay."
Zen turned on the video phone. He grabbed Joe's hair and smashed her face onto the screen of the phone.
"Do you hear her now? Talk away. You girls could figure things out, right?"
Madeline caught a glimpse of Zen's face, which was burning red with fury. Joe's eyes were dazed and her forehead was bruised. Joe bit her lips and looked into the screen. Madeline knew Joe wouldn't cry. You hurt her, you bastard. You told me you wouldn't hurt her if I found your stupid avatar, Madeline roared.
But you found nothing,
Zen screamed. Chapter 3.
He didn't hurt me, Madeline. I tried to run and fell down the stairs. Should have taken my stupid heels off.
Joe smiled weakly. A tear rolled down Madeline's cheek. Joe was barely 5'2", and she always wore those impossibly high heels. Madeline couldn't understand why she was so conscious about her height. Joe was gorgeous. She was a brilliant computer game designer, but no one could peg her as a nerd. Madeline wiped her tear and smiled back. You sure you're okay?
I'm fine. You take care of yourself, Madeline.
I can't get the blue dots to work, Joe. Can you tell me what the game is about? What am I looking for? Joe was about to say something, but Zen yanked her off the phone.
All you have to do is find out who plays with Joe using the name White Knight. You've seen the game and the player. You should be able to tell who the guy is in real life. I told you he works for the LeBlancs, and he's been playing from that building. You don't have to go in. Just wait him out.
Do you understand that LeBlanc Pharmaceuticals is a global company that employs millions of people?
But I gave you the precise location.
I told you, it's like a military barrack. I used my journalist credentials to ask for an interview with their PR department.
And?
The waiting list is a month.
I don't have a month. I give you 3 days.
It's not possible.
I don't give a shit. If you don't get this done in time, I'll be dead. But I'm not going down alone, I can guarantee you that. I'll send you more info as soon as I have it. But 3 days is all the time you've got.
Zen hung up. Madeline slid down to the floor and curled up next to the sofa. She let the tears fall freely. She could fall apart right here, right now. Nobody knew and nobody cared. Joe was her family. The only family Madeline had ever known. She had taken her in and had shared her family with Madeline unconditionally. Joe's parents had never once asked Madeline about her own family. They knew she didn't have one. Otherwise, she would have had to tell them that she had come in a basket, abandoned on the front porch of some random house. Her teeth chattered, and her body shook with a chill. She couldn't remember the last time she'd eaten or slept. At the corner of the room, the fireplace stood cold and empty. She'd forgotten to start the fire. A shadow hovered at the window and tripped over the potted plant at the front door, but Madeline had drifted to sleep and heard nothing. A piece of paper slid under her door. A crash woke Madeline. She jumped up to her feet, panting. Then she let out a sigh of relief. She had kicked the side table in her sleep, and the vase on top of the table had crashed to the floor. Madeline checked the clock. She must have passed out for the night. It was just past 5 a.m. She glanced out the window without any hope of seeing the winter sun at this hour. Madeline went to the kitchen to make herself a strong mug of coffee and to find something with which to clean up the broken vase. A short moment later, she settled in front of her computer and stared at the mountain of documentation she had researched about LeBlanc Pharmaceuticals. Secrets. That was the conclusion she had drawn. Not that she couldn't find any information. On the contrary, there was too much information. 10 years of experience in journalism had taught her that the information about the LeBlancs was only a facade. Even the underground information revealed nothing about the company that they didn't want the public to know. The LeBlanc family was filthy rich and extremely private. Madeline had to congratulate herself after hours of searching. She found one picture of the current head of the family, Kieran LeBlanc. One lousy picture. The picture must have come from a very keen stalker. It was taken from a distance, and the scene it showed was reflected on a traffic monitoring mirror in a car park. Judging by the portion of the cars and guards around him, Madeline speculated that Kieran was tall and well-built, but on the slender side. Young, she mused, and maybe long hair. The picture was so distorted that Madeline wasn't sure she would have recognized Kieran if she met him in the flesh. She drew imaginary lines with her finger around Kieran's face, trying to make out the part that the poor quality image didn't catch. Then she glanced at the corner of the door, on the floor, and saw the note. Madeline picked the note up. It read, Hyde Park. Chapter 4
Madeline stretched for her morning run and winced at how stiff her body felt after slacking off for a week. Hyde Park was just around the corner from her place. Had Zen wanted to tip her off as to where the LeBlancs lived? She doubted that. There were residential areas in Hyde Park, but she couldn't imagine the LeBlancs in these apartments, regardless of how exclusive they were. Madeline speculated that members of the LeBlanc family lived in castles, in secret highlands. She jiggled a container of self-defense spray in her pocket to ensure it was secured and within easy reach, then headed to the park. The fog was as thick as clouds. Madeline could hardly see more than 10 feet in front of her. She kept to the left, but then by habit drifted over to the right. Suddenly, right in front of her, a man emerged from the fog like a warrior. Late 30s, tall. At least 6'3", she would guess. With a slender build and well-toned muscles covered attractively in fair English skin. His thick black hair almost touched his shoulders. His strong face, the face of a dark angel, looked straight ahead before it registered the coming motion. His eyes. Madeline was sure that it was his eyes that caused such an electrifying reaction in her body. Dark, smoky gray eyes. Intense, captivating, and striking. Because Madeline had spent so much time evaluating the beauty of the human being in front of her, she didn't have any time to adjust her speed or steer herself away from the imminent collision. She would have been knocked off her feet and landed on her backside if he hadn't grabbed her.
God damn it! Don't you look when you run, Kieran?
The words were out before she could edit them. She had called his name, which meant she had to think with lightning speed right now to explain herself. To explain that she was not a stalker. Her thoughts ran rampant. She could tell him it wasn't him she was after. She wanted his company. No, she didn't want his company. She needed the guy who worked in his company. But that wouldn't explain how she knew his name. Maybe she should tell him she's a psychic. No, again, that would be a lie, and it wouldn't go down well. Her thoughts tangled in a mushy mess. And she felt as if her face was on fire. Kieran released Madeline after a swivel to balance the running momentum so that they both regained their footing.
"Excuse me," he said.
"Sorry, it was my fault. I should have kept right. No, I mean left."
"Is that an offense, to run on the wrong side of a pedestrian path in a public park in New York?"
She wanted to swoon with his sexy accent, but her suspicion had gotten a better judgment of her. Madeline narrowed her eyes.
"How do you know I'm from New York?"
"Your accent gave it away. I have a lot of business dealings in New York. I can tell."
Kieran grinned. Her heart skipped a beat when she saw that grin.
"For pity's sake, you're 33, not a teenager, Madeline. Focus."
Kieran drank from his bottle water and sat down on the bench.
"I don't think my name is written on my forehead."
"Talk to your PR department. I'm the reporter who's been bugging them for the past few days to get an interview. Of course I know your name." That was lame, she thought. Kieran didn't have a public profile, and she couldn't even get a decent picture of him. But she couldn't think of anything else, so she settled with a statement. Kieran nodded politely and waited.
"Oh, I'm Madeline Rue from The Trumpet."
Madeline reached her hand out for a handshake.
"The Trumpet?"
She didn't need to look at Kieran's face to see his expression.
"Oh, we're certainly not the New York Times or anything."
"I beg your pardon. I didn't mean to offend."
He stood up quickly from the bench to return the handshake before she withdrew her hand. Madeline laughed.
"You have to do a lot better than that to offend me. We're young, small, and not a mainstream magazine. Of course you've never heard of us."
Kieran smiled.
"How off-stream are you?"
"Well, let's just say we're a bit quirky in our approach to serious issues."
Kieran murmured.
"Ah, interesting. So you don't just blow the whistle. You blow the whole magnificent trumpet to the glory."
Madeline laughed.
"You've got it, Kieran." She suddenly realized that she hadn't laughed for days. It felt good, but it was much too friendly. Madeline tilted her head to look behind Kieran. He turned, looking in the same direction.
What are you looking for?
Bodyguards? Kieran looked at Madeline blankly. Then he just laughed.
You think I have bodyguards with me when I go running? Who do you think I am? A prince?
Practically, Madeline muttered.
I beg your pardon?
His smile faded. Well, what do you expect people to think? Your family isn't media-friendly. Your company has more security than the military. Nobody knows anything about your family. It is more difficult to approach you than it is to make an appointment to see the Queen.
Well, that's because the Queen has to answer to her people. We don't have to answer to anyone.
Or you'd have everyone answer to you. Kieran lowered his voice.
We have money, but we don't bribe or bully anyone. I don't care for my family being judged because we want our privacy.
Kieran jammed his hands in his pockets, waiting for Madeline's response. She cursed herself. I'm sorry. It's just been very hard to get in touch with you. I mean, with your PR department. It's almost impossible, and my boss isn't happy at all about my progress. Kieran nodded.
What did the trumpet want to talk to our PR department about? You came all the way from New York. It couldn't be a minor issue.
Nothing serious, really. I suggested the topic. LeBlanc Pharmaceuticals is a very successful business. I'm sure the media has made the most of what they could. But for me, behind that business success is always the people. I always find your family intriguing. Kieran smiled.
Oh, you think we have something to hide?
No, I think you have a lot to show. I'd like to have a bit of what you're willing to show. Kieran paused for a brief moment, then nodded.
So, is it my family or my family's business that you're interested in?
She looked into Kieran's eyes. They were intense now, deep gray, and mysteriously serious. Both? He shook his head.
You have only one option.
Your family? A slight smile crossed Kieran's face.
Then you can interview me. I will represent my family. Would tomorrow night be convenient? Over dinner.
What? Of course, dinner!
That's the only time I can manage.
Madeline nodded. Kieran smiled.
7 p.m. at 1 Hyde Park. I'm looking forward to it. Goodbye for now, Madeline.
Kieran nodded a goodbye and turned to walk away. Why? Your family's never talked to the media before? Kieran turned around, sending Madeline a look that made her stomach quiver.
Simply because I'd like to see more of you, he said.
Then he walked away and disappeared into the fog. Chapter 5. Madeline's internal clock woke her in the morning. It seemed she had adjusted to the time difference. She didn't have many hours of sleep, but they were good and solid hours, enough to get her going and be prepared. Tonight was her chance to end this and put her life back to normal. Was that all she wanted with the dinner? Had she thought about Kieran at all? She got off the bed, giving herself a mental slap whenever her brain wandered in Kieran's direction. She needed to stay focused and plan for the night. She should have chosen the business rather than the family when Kieran gave her the options. But the man headed the family and ran the business. He could give her the exact information she needed. If she had gone with the business option, then she might have ended up with one of the minions whose job was to withhold information from her. Madeline made herself a cup of coffee and stopped that stream of thought. There was no point rationalizing a past action that she couldn't reverse anyway. Her response to Kieran in the park hadn't been optimal, but she was a woman, and his physical attraction was undeniable. Hell, he was like a magnet. Mental slap. Madeline tucked at her hair, pulling it back into a ponytail, and putting herself into active working mode. Her phone rang. Paul's voice squeaked through from the other end of the line when Madeline picked up.
Here you are, still on the planet, thank God. You can't just go poof and let me handle everything, Maddie.
Paul was co-editor with Madeline at the Trumpet. His task was to add a feminine touch to the magazine. Balance the scales, he always said, as Madeline had made the magazine quite boyish. Paul was a decent writer and a good guy in the industry, as far as Madeline was concerned.
A girl is entitled to a vacation, Paul.
I'm so glad you finally realize you're a girl. Yes, you can take a vacation, but you have to give me some notice in advance of more than, say, half an hour. Also, I can take care for your half-finished stories, but not your half-eaten slop, half-finished carrot rubber, and half-decent boyfriend.
First, the slop is homemade lasagna, and you're lucky to have half of it. Second, the carrot cake is from Joe's brother's one-of-a-kind bakery, and he specifically baked it for me. So, you're welcome to have it, and I'll thank them on your behalf. Third, Stephen is not a half-decent man. He's better than a lot of guys I know.
Oh, so Stephen is your boyfriend now, is he?
Who were you talking about?
Not Stephen, apparently. A bold guy, shuffling through your desk like a thief. Took off when I called out. Be careful, Maddie. I think you might have a stalker, and that's a best-case scenario.
Madeline felt a pinch of worry. A dozen what-if scenarios flew through her mind.
Are you okay? She asked Paul. I'm sorry if this worries you.
No, I'm all right,
Paul said.
You want me to call Stephen? He's a cop. He could do something about this.
No, Madeline assured him. I can handle this. Give me a few days, I'll sort it out. I promise. Let me know if anything else happens.
Hey, how about you work from home for a few days?
Paul chuckled.
Really, Maddie?
Yeah, really, Madeline said. Just do that for me, will you? I'll talk to you later. I'll explain more. Everything, okay?
Paul reluctantly agreed and hung up the phone. Madeline called Zen. He switched on the video phone when he picked up the call. His sleazy smile flashed on the screen.
Miss me?
You don't have to sniff around my workplace and freak out other people. I said I'd get the information for you, and I will, Madeline fumed. The smile disappeared from Zen's face.
I don't snoop around no place. Who else knows about this?
A misstep. Damn. Slow down, she warned herself.
No, I'm just annoyed, that's all. I have a few unkind readers sending nasty notes to my paper, that's all.
Your job sucks. Poking your nose into other people's business, you'll end up with something as big as a bomb or as little as a bullet. They're both lethal, though. What do you got for me?
Not much yet. Is White Knight a game or a character?
It's an avatar. Jesus Christ, don't you know anything about games?
No, not really. I don't even know exactly how to get the information. Even if I should get inside the LeBlanc premises, you want me to just go around asking who plays White Knight?
Madeline could picture Zen wanting to knock his head against the wall to quell his frustration. Maybe it was her head that he wanted to whack. She chuckled on the inside and kept a straight face. Playing dumb was working for her at this point, so she kept at it. Zen calmly explained.
No, don't ask directly, and don't alarm anyone. All you have to do is tell them that one computer within their premises was used to play an interactive game. Make it up. Say the game was illegal or whatever. Don't say anything about White Knight at this stage. I need a list of the real names of those who played the games from that building. If you can narrow it down to the one guy who plays as White Knight, that's ideal. But I understand it might be difficult. Got it?
Madeline nodded.
When can I expect some results?
Come on, you only gave me Hyde Park. That's a residential address, not the business headquarters. How am I supposed to...
What? I didn't give you the address. I don't know the address. Who tipped you? Who else knows about this?
Zen's face started to burn with anger. Fuck. This is a total fuck-up. Who wrote the note? She searched frantically in her mind for an answer, but found nothing.
What happened? You better fucking tell me.
Zen yelled into the phone.
I was...
Tell me!
Zen's demonic voice threatened to rip open the phone. Chapter 6. The ceiling-high double steel door automatically slid open when Kieran approached, revealing a vast, lush office with glass windows opening to the endless horizon of the city. Before the door closed, Lindsay called from behind,
"Kieran!"
and trailed into the office with a stack of papers in his hands. Kieran turned around.
"Yes, Lindsay, did I forget to sign something?"
Lindsay Freeman was in his late 30s and had been Kieran's right-hand man as long as Kieran had been in business. As they were of similar age, Kieran could talk to Lindsay almost about anything. They were good friends, and Kieran trusted Lindsay to be the face of the business when it came to dealing with outsiders.
"You want to take a look at this?"
Lindsay said and put a computer disk on the desk. Kieran glanced at the disk.
"Gate security? Shouldn't Robert be handling this?"
He slid the disk into the computer.
"I just checked things over and this caught my eye."
Kieran shook his head.
"You can't keep an eye on everything. Robert's a very capable man." "No doubt about that, but I'll sleep better checking everything this week because you're here." "I don't want to be the cause of your sleep deprivation. By the way, how are Liz and Anna?" "Enjoying their vacation at a warm beach in Bali now,"
Lindsay grinned.
"Anna finished her exams with good grades and wanted a vacation before entering high school."
Kieran stopped looking at the computer monitor.
"You're saying you let your wife and daughter go on a vacation by themselves because I'm here this week?"
Lindsay laughed.
"Come on, I know your schedule and work is important, Kieran. They decided on the vacation on a whim. It's hardly my fault."
Kieran shook his head.
"When they kick you out of the house, you aren't going to sleep on my couch."
The secretary knocked on the door and walked in with a tray. She put the coffee on the desk.
"Double shot. No cream for you, Kieran. Double cream for you, Lindsay."
She put a plate of 4 small cookies on the desk.
"Mom made these and insisted I take them to work for you, Kieran. She does this every week. She thinks you're in the office 9 to 5, 5 days a week." She smiled. "I ate your cookies every other week, but today they're all yours."
Kieran grinned.
"Butterscotch. My favorite. Thank you, Lily."
He reached out for a cookie, and his gaze lighted on Lily's hand. Kieran dropped the cookies back to the plate. He stood up, walked around his desk, and kissed Lily on the cheek.
"Congratulations. Sam is a very lucky guy."
Lily smiled and twirled her engagement ring around her finger.
"Thank you. It was last week. We were very happy. Well, I better let you get back to work."
She nodded a goodbye and exited the room. Kieran grabbed the desk phone and ordered flowers to be sent to Lily's address. Then he looked up and saw Lindsay shaking his head.
"You haven't seen me doing this before?"
Kieran arched an eyebrow.
"I only say this as a friend. It's been such a long time since..." "Don't start,"
Kieran cut in with a voice so low that it almost sounded like a growl. Then he pointed at the computer monitor.
"What did you want me to look at here?"
As soon as Kieran finished his question, he saw the answer. On the screen was Madeline in front of the LeBlanc Pharmaceuticals, walking in front of a double-decker.
"You see that?"
Lindsay asked. Kieran nodded.
"Yes, I know her. That's Madeline Rue. She's a journalist from New York."
"I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about the guy." Kieran frowned, looking at the man dragging Madeline out of the way of the bus.
"He's no random pedestrian. From this angle, he must have been stalking right at our doorsteps. We got the scanner data on that, right?"
"Yep, that's where the ass-kicker stuff is," Lindsay muttered. Kieran pulled out the keyboard and typed in the command and codes to pull up the scanner data. On the screen was the X-ray scan data of a 500-meter perimeter outside the gate. Kieran was about to ask something, but Lindsay said in anticipation,
"Robert kept a very tight lid on the scanner. We know it's not strictly legal. You don't have to be the only one to keep an eye on everything."
Lindsay smiled to himself as he had even the scores with Kieran. Kieran's smile faded as he stared at the monitor.